Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Call 334-321-1390, toll-free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. A little rain coming through earlier, and looks like we've got a little repeat on its way through. And, hey, that's fine. We needed some rain. We haven't had it in a few days. Just come on through and be gone. It looks like it'll be out of here in plenty of time for homecoming this weekend, which, once again, we look like for the second straight game, we're going to have amazingly good weather here for football this weekend.
Yeah, 80 degrees is what it says right now. 80-65 for a 6 o'clock kickoff, which means kickoff probably in the mid to upper 70s.
Upper 70s probably, because it won't be dark by then. But that means incredible. You could be, you know, 70 or upper 60s by the end of the game.
Yeah, I'm used to it now, though, after last weekend. We froze at that Giants game Friday
night. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us as he is on Wednesdays. And, yeah, it was not your normal – I mean, we're talking about how fortunate we are, but the folks I've talked to, they're out there, said, yeah, it was chilly, and they're glad they took, you know, their pullovers and jackets and things like that.
It was cool. Like I said,
Jason says he about froze,
being on the field, it's cool. Being on the field Saturday night wasn't as bad. Now, I tell you what, I had shorts on. But I did have my jacket with a little hoodie, and I pulled the hoodie up a little bit at times on Saturday night. I mean, but Friday night, Giants game, upper deck, where we could sit, where we could see the whole bay.
Saw your pictures.
It got cool up there now. But it was nice just to kind of experience that.
And there was a big Auburn crowd there at the Giants game.
There were
Friday
lots
night.
Of folks at the Giants game. Lots of folks, obviously, there Saturday. There were a lot of people surprised at how many Auburn fans came there. And I said, look, it's been a trip that people have been waiting for.
Well, it's one that, yeah, that they haven't had the opportunity to do. I mean, Auburn was out there for the national championship game in L.A., but this is different. The opportunity to go up the coast a bit to Northern California and see some things that a lot of folks, you know, have never had the opportunity to.
Cal's a storied program, too, and Auburn – there's no telling the next time Auburn's going to play a game in Berkeley. A little bit like, I mean, it's not quite the same as the Penn State series.
But I'd say it's unlikely that Auburn plays again there.
Exactly. So I mean, I think there's reason to believe it's at least once in a generation,
correct,
maybe once in a lifetime, depending on how things shake out. But they could be in the same conference
I don't know. And they may be less. And, like, you know, it's taken a long time for these games to happen. What I'm hoping is that with a playoff system, it allows more of these games to happen, but I'm afraid it's going to allow less of them to happen because the scheduling differences and how teams get into conferences. I hope it allows people to play more of these because this is what college football is all about, is about having games like this.
Oh, going places where you haven't been before and getting a chance
How would you feel about the standard being 11 games against Power 5 teams?
I think it'd be fine with a playoff system. I think it'd be fine to go, hey, look, you're going to have 9 conference games. You're going to have, you know, at least one. I think you have to have at least one where you're going 9 conference games, at least one other Power 5 opponent.
There are multiple Power 5 teams this year with 11 Power 5 teams on their schedule. Colorado included. I believe Colorado is playing 11 Power 5 teams and Colorado State. That's their schedule this season. I think USC is playing 11 Power 5 teams and San Jose State, whoever they opened with. I believe that's correct. I mean, it can be done. The move there would be, you know, you'd also have to find folks willing to pay for it on the TV end, which is getting trickier and trickier to do as we move forward. But no, I think it would be great to see more games like this. And I guess the downside would be for Group of Five programs and FCS programs that need those games. That's where their economics,
the monetary thing comes in for the smaller programs, and it's why this is going to be a conversation maybe for another day and another year, but it's why I honestly believe that we're going to have to get to a point where there's a Power 5 national championship and a Group of 5 national championship. and you sell a group of five playoff TV, somebody would pick it up and somebody would show it and somebody would have success with it. And you get that money to divide up between group of five programs. I think that would help you allow some of those things to happen, because you're right. If you don't have, like Ball State, if you don't have Kentucky in week one and Georgia in week two, then you're not funding an athletic department mm-hmm. in a lot of places. It's necessary. Now, can a general fund help to supplement programs at places like that? I don't know. There's enough money out there to do that, but people aren't going to just willingly give it up if they can use it for their own good either.
No, and there's probably an economic, there's a hit that those group of five programs will have to take.
Correct. And FCS, if you start going, okay, you can't play one of those games. I mean, for Samford, you're talking about, I mean, it doesn't happen without a game like an Auburn game
would,
or
the,
some
would
of
the FCS cease to exist if they stopped being able to play games against?
I don't think they would
the
cease to exist.
What would happen?
But you would then, to me, FCS and D2 would then become almost the same thing again.
And there'd be programs that decide this.
Correct. There would be. You'd still have it, but it would be. To me, you would go back to almost the Gulf South Conference days where that would be what you would do, because if you're not playing FCS games, it if you're not having that D1 game with some of those schools, some of them don't, but a lot of them do because they need that money.
There was real concern before the Stanford and Cal deal was okayed. There was real concern that if Stanford was left like sort of flapping in the breeze, they might have just pulled the plug on the football program and decided we're going to fund the rest of the rest of our athletic programs through.
Well, if you're a school like Stanford and you don't have a Power 5 TV deal, then now they've got money, but people are going, well, I'm not going to use that money just to give to football. No. If you're not playing in one of those leagues, it becomes a serious question.
Oregon
then.
State seems to be in a massive bind.
Oregon State, Washington State, those two schools are, it's huge.
Oregon State, I think, borrowed against future Pac-12 media earnings to fund a stadium renovation. And now, I mean, there's a real question of who's going to be in the schedule for that stadium. And can they generate interest playing a Mountain West Conference schedule? Not to mention the bite that they take from not being in the Pac-12 anymore and not getting, you know, from the jump from the Pac-12 to the Mountain West or wherever they end up as a media rights thing. So, yeah, there's a couple programs with real murky futures moving forward. SEC teams seem to be stable for now.
Jason Caldwell with us, Bill and Dan. Also Drew, of course, at the controls here as we get things underway on the Wednesday drive. Jason back from his trip and was saying he's still not completely recovered.
Yeah, and I can see, you know, obviously I'm much older, but I didn't play a football game either. It takes a toll. It does. It takes a toll to travel across the country. And, you know, for the team, you know, they finished, took a shower, got something to eat on the way out the door.
And we're gone.
Went to the airport and got back here and got back. They got back to the complex about 10 a.m. Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And so you get a chance to sleep a little bit for them, probably some of that afternoon. But it just to get your body clock back a little bit takes time. Like for me, I'm used to getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's when we get up at 6 o'clock. That's when we start getting ready for school and all those things. And all of a sudden you go out there and, you know, we go to a Giants game on Friday night and you go, okay, go to Giants game. We leave in the fifth inning of a Giants game, but you start going, okay, what time is that? Well, that was about 11 o'clock our time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's feeling like bedtime.
Yeah, it's 11 o'clock our time. Well, you walk a half a mile back to the car and then 40-minute drive to where we were staying, and you know, watch TV for a little bit, and you look up, and it's about, you know, 2 a.m. our time. You know,
2 a.m. your body's time. Yeah.
And then Saturday night after the game, we were standing in the press box doing our video wrap-up, and it was 1:30 Pacific time. And so you're talking about just the differences and having to get used to those things again. And so I talked to like Gabe Rose today, and Gabe's used to doing it. Baseball, played in Oakland, mm-hmm. doing it back both ways. And he said, He said it takes you about a week.
The good thing in baseball would be you'd go stay on a West Coast there. Swing and be there for a few days.
You'd stay out there. But he said, but once you either the first one going or the first one coming back,
yep.
He said it'd take you 3 or 4 days to get back used to it again.
If Auburn had like a Thursday night game this week, and I know Thursday night games have mostly been phased out of college football.
I'll stop you. They wouldn't have done it. They would not have done it.
Right.
You could not have done those things.
The turnaround from Saturday.
You couldn't
night
do it. You wouldn't do it. Coach would say, "No, I'm not doing that." And an AD said, "Oh, I'm not doing that."
We'll see you on Saturday.
Yeah, correct.
Auburn's fortunate they have the schedule they do. I mean, I'm not downing Samford or anything, but if Auburn had an SEC game this week, it would be a lot tougher.
It would make it much more difficult. And I'll say this too: the planning that was done for this season, they specifically took Sundays off this year, knowing this trip was on the schedule, to say, look, we're going to go ahead and set Sundays as our day off because we're not going to be able to do anything on that Sunday. So, look, we're going to take Sunday off. That's our day off.
They're going to arrive on that Sunday, as correct. We found out.
You know, so basically that was it. That was done in preparation. So basically this game kind of dictated the season schedule because of how difficult it is.
So let's get into what you saw on Saturday, right before we move on to Samford. I mean,
I definitely want to get Jason's Jason's thoughts on the game Saturday.
You want to do it now, or you want to take a break and get rolling?
Well, I'll tell you what. Before we get to break, just we'll go ahead and get Jason's final thoughts just on the rest of the trip.
Yeah, it was fun. Unique. Cal is a very unique campus. Everything. It was really interesting though. Because we parked and they're like, okay, you're 4 blocks from the stadium. Well, you can't see it. They're like, go up here, take a right. So we ask a couple.
Is it one of those you come around?
Ask a couple of policemen. I was like, where is he? Goes, get up to this road, take a left, and you'll see it. You'll walk right to it. Took me until we were 30 yards from the stadium before I knew the stadium was there. Because it's all the way up on a hill. There's trees. The view
inside
the stadium
was
really
impressive.
Nice.
Open air press box, right? I mean, you were on the field, right?
No, it's closed. It was closed. Okay. I don't know. I say this for the people who didn't go. If you stuck Vanderbilt Stadium and said, hey, 60,000 seats of Vandy Stadium, just dropped it in California, that's basically what it was.
Well, you're talking one that's been around for 100 years.
Yeah. And so it it's built into the side of a hill. And when I walked in, somebody said, here's the thing to notice. Look at this end zone, look at this end zone, and then look in between them, and what do you not see? There's no portal for fans to go into because it's built into a mountain. So to go to
you
a
walk
restroom.
Along the side of the.
To go to a restroom, go to all that stuff. It was porta potties on top of the hill. You climb. So if you're on the front row, you climb to the top, all the way up. There's no in-between. So it very unique and just a different world. Here on a Saturday on game day, anywhere you go, you know it's a game day. I don't believe that probably 10% of the people that we crossed path with that day had any idea there was a football game. Well, that
especially
afternoon.
If you started 40 minutes from the stadium in San Francisco or San Jose.
Like no question about that. They had no clue. But yeah, even getting into Cal, I think people were like, "Hey, there's a lot of people here. What's going on?" Yeah, correct. Yeah. But hey, they were nice. Here's the thing: I know there's places in California that probably aren't the best places to go. Had none of those issues. Perfectly fine. Everywhere we went was great. People were nice. So in that regard.
I just was kept hearing about the scenery, the breathtaking scenery.
Yeah. So drove down, saw the Golden Gate Bridge, did things I wanted to do other than, you know, play golf at Pebble Beach or do whatever. We did drive by Olympic Club and we drove by a couple of those places. But I said, look, I'd already made up my mind. I was like, I'm not going to Pebble Beach to eat lunch. I'm not going to Pebble Beach to buy a shirt. I'm not going there unless I'm playing golf. So that already made up my mind. It's like, I'm not doing that.
The sense I got about game day on the West Coast in the Pac-12, because I don't want to generalize it. I think of the places in cities where the community revolves more around the campus, Pullman, Corvallis.
College towns.
In college towns on the West Coast, I think game day is, and it helps if you have an on-campus stadium. too. Because when I was at UCLA, the Rose Bowl's an hour away.
Correct.
And the basketball stadium, that was during the Pauley renovation. So we were playing at the Sports Arena, which has since been bulldozed for...
Which is next door to the Coliseum.
Yeah, that's where LAFC plays now.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't tell on a Saturday, even on a home game. Like, the day before, the day of, there really wasn't much at UCLA of a game day atmosphere. But I think part of that was...
It's L.A.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
and there's just so much other stuff going on.
You could tell, to their credit, you could tell when USC had a big game. Like, there was a, especially on that side of town.
Right there.
Yeah, like on that side of town, like it was evident that there was a big thing going on at SC.
Well, because they do have tailgates. They have some things like that. But, yeah, it was, you're right. It doesn't have that. Even though it is a campus feel, it's not a campus that is, you know, they've had their moments in football, but it's not a campus that people go, okay, we got a big football game going on. It's just not that place. But people were friendly. It was nice. And, you know, one of those trips that you go, okay, that's one I'll remember.
Yeah, mark that one off. That's good. Jason Caldwell with us. We will get his thoughts on the game and more. You can join in. Give us a call, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And they also sponsor the podcast, which you can find however you listen to podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com or use your favorite podcasting platform. Rate, review, subscribe. It helps us out. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'll be right back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Bending, stretching, walking.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 21 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell here with Drew at the controls. And you can join us. You heard the phone number, 334-321-1390. Give us a call if you want to get into conversation. We'll get Jason now to just give us his thoughts. I mean, it was a game that from the first possession, it's like, things are not going right, and it never really clicked until Auburn had to have that score midway through the fourth quarter, and then were able to make a stand defensively and run the clock out.
Yeah, you're right. It started from the beginning. Just, you know, the decision by Peyton Thorne was just a bad decision to start with. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not what you would expect. And you know, I think Hugh Freeze has talked about it a couple times before. About, like, he felt like, you know, we got on Peyton Thorne that he started pressing a little bit. It felt that way from the beginning of that game.
Yeah,
Saturday.
He seemed uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so yes, hey, they got to be better wide receiver. They got to do some of those things, but and you know, they haven't gotten a ton of separation. That's why I think he's talked about, you know, when you look at Jay Fair and Var together. I wonder if we'll see more Malcolm Johnson. I wonder if we'll see more Caleb Burton. With the quickness side of things, because the guys aren't getting much separation right now. But this decision-making kind of early on for them. But it was the difference in my thoughts on that game, standing in that press box at 3 o'clock in the morning and Tuesday, were completely different after going back and kind of looking. And in we're all prisoners of the moment. And the prisoner of the moment thoughts are, whew, that was terrible. Well, it was terrible because of all the things they did to make it terrible. It was terrible because they turned it over a bunch. It was terrible because they had a bunch of key penalties. That's what made it terrible. Now, it's just hard to overcome those things for really good football teams. It's almost impossible to overcome that thing for a team like Auburn. And I think, and I hope people kind of get back to the realization here. The people that thought this was a team that was going to win 11, 12 games. This team, we've said it from the get-go, this team went from not having a chance to having a chance to be competitive because of what they'd done. This team didn't go from, hey, having a chance to be 9-3 to being a chance to be 12-0. That's not what the portal was about this year. The portal was about giving you a chance to be to have a chance to compete. You can't do that if you do play like they did Saturday. You can do those things if you eliminate turnovers, this team isn't good enough to overcome those things. They found a way Saturday because the defense was really good.
No, and not in conference play, you lose.
You're not playing anybody within 17 points if you play like that again that you did on Saturday night. Now, defensively, they laid it on the line. They did a great job. But that's, I mean, a Cal team that's probably maybe a 5 or 6 win team, maybe, but the Pac-12 is really good, so they may not, not win that game.
You were there. I mean, on TV, I mean, I wondered about their offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, they're solid. Okay. I think just solid. And so, but getting back to the original question, I thought, had Auburn not made mistakes, done those things, even you could have had even all the stuff in the first half happen. If Damari Austin doesn't fumble and Auburn goes in, to no doubt in my mind, they go down to score right there. They go up 14-3. Probably win that game 28-10, something like that. And it's pretty comfortable. And you go, oh, man. But it only added to the, oh, here you go again. And you have the last turnover. You have all these things that happened. There was just no rhythm at all.
How lucky was Auburn not to have the first touchdown, the Cal fumble?
Yeah, which I mean, just blown dead. Yeah, because that holding them to a field goal in that moment was a massive win.
Yep.
Yeah, if you have that happen, and I'll never forget it. It might, because this team's not anywhere as good, but I'll never forget in 1999 going to Tennessee and the first possession throw a pick six and the game's over with. Cal wasn't good enough to do that, I don't think, for this Auburn team.
It's a nightmare start.
But it would have, yes. And so I thought they pressed. I really did. And the more it happened, the more they pressed. And in the end, they found a way to win, which is probably the most important thing.
Go ahead. Now, I was going to say, I mean, some of the numbers you look at don't appear that bad, but you only get around 50 snaps. Your running backs average better than 5 yards a rush. So the numbers don't look that bad. They just kept doing things to keep the drives from continuing and either turnovers or penalties and then having to punt the ball. I mean, it was just one of those things where, they couldn't get it going. They were fortunate that the defense was able to keep Cal out of the end zone, and they were also fortunate that their kicker,
And got a little struggled. Pressure, and Auburn did put some pressure on to add some of those things too. I look at it, and one of the things to me is I had the same thoughts. I believe Auburn went into that game and said, look, we're going to be able to run the football, and we're going to be able to win this game, and we're going to be able to just do it that way and play pretty close to the vest. And then you had to open it up the second half, and you have to use Rivaldo Fairweather, and you have to throw it to the backs. It felt like to me that, okay, we got to go to our guy now. We don't want to do this, but we've got to go do this.
You got to win the game. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, because we didn't see him in week one. It kind of felt like early on that we're not going to show everybody this guy quite yet. And to their credit, they went, all right, well, we got to start using this guy now, and we got to throw it to him. And now you look at it, and to me, in the passing game, and I wrote about this Monday, I think you got to decide now – What are you right now for this team? And I think they know they got to be able to throw the football. You got to be able to throw it because you're just not – I mean, we just saw it Saturday night with Alabama. I don't care what you got, who you are, greatest offensive line in the history of football, whatever you are, you cannot consistently just line up and run the football at people and expect to win. You just can't do it. You got to throw it. Saturday's the perfect time to go out there and just sling it around the yard. Just throw it, build some confidence, and target your guys that are playmakers and give them a chance to make plays.
Who's your list right now of playmakers?
I just mentioned them. Jay Fair, Javaris Johnson, Malcolm Johnson, Caleb Burton, I think, is one of those guys, and Rivaldo Fairweather.
Amari Kelly's been on the field a lot. He hasn't been targeted.
He's a guy that can do those things too. But from what I've seen so far, we've heard a lot about Shane Hooks. We heard a lot about Jair Shorter. I just don't see those guys getting the separation that you need. I don't care how big you are. You got to be able to separate from guys, and I just haven't seen that yet from those guys.
It's a big next couple of weeks for Hooks and Shorter especially.
You got to find a playmaker to be able to do those things. And the problem is you look in, Jay Fair, slot. Barr Johnson, slot. Caleb Burton, slot. Okay, Barr has played he's a veteran guy. Can you look like the old Houston – Houston Cougars and play 3-5, 8-5, 9-5. I think you could do that. I think there's a place to do that.
The Kurt Warner Rams didn't have a big receiver. Like those were three. You know, well, I mean, I know it's a different.
Well, just look at Alabama the last 5 years.
Their guys weren't all 6'4", 6'5".
None of those guys.
The four first rounders. Who was the biggest? Maybe 6'2".
The other stuff
takes care of itself. Okay. I mean, like, yeah.
So Hugh Freeze was asked about the offensive line at the press conference on Monday. There's been some misunderstanding, right, about who's been playing and where. I think we contributed a little bit to that. I made a mistake about that. But I mean, Xavier Miller and Dylan Wade played the whole game at tackle, right?
Correct. Those were
the, and then yes. they now yeah. on the last couple of drives, Cam Stutz wasn't out there.
He had an ankle.
And he had an ankle.
Yes, they put
Jeremiah Wright came in. Mm-hmm.
But barring injury, they seem to have a starting five.
I thought going into this game we would see less rotation,
mm-hmm. and we did.
And we did.
You saw six offensive linemen.
We saw less rotation. They stuck with their guys.
Even though initially Jaden Muskrat was listed as a starter, but
that was a mistake. I went back and watched the first play.
Yeah, he did not play.
He did not start.
May have played like on extra points.
Yeah, yeah, he was on the field.
But it was Miller offensively.
The starting offensive line. It's been corrected.
It was what we saw the first game.
Yeah, Miller and Wade at tackle, Britton and
from somewhere came. Things got better when Gunnar Britton shifted from guard to tackle, and no, Gunnar played guard the entire game.
Yes, he never Xavier Miller stayed out there the entire time. So
the
yes.
swap, I think people thought because they saw Jeremiah Wright out there that Britton had shifted to tackle when actually Cam Stutz had left the game.
Yeah.
And that's why Jeremiah Wright was
correct.
Out there.
And so, yeah, the things got better when Rivaldo Fairweather caught a couple balls. They threw the ball to Demaryius Austin out of the backfield and got the passing game going a little bit.
So is Cam an injury concern?
I don't think so. I think he's fine now. Okay. I think he rolled a little bit. I've seen him out there a little bit this week. You know, I think if they say, hey, you're not 100%, then they wouldn't play him and make sure he's ready for next week.
What about
– that's what you really want. You want to be as healthy as you can for next week.
What about Kaufman?
I think that one's one that we probably won't know until Saturday, mm-hmm. to be quite honest. I think, you know, he said hopeful today on Donovan Kaufman. That's another one for me. That if you go look, hey, especially because of what it was, then you're going to err on the side of caution. I've said I'd be surprised if we see Donovan Kaufman.
I guess I have two more before we go to break. Nehemiah Pritchett, what's the word there?
He traveled, went out in warm-ups early on and may have felt a little tight still in that ankle. Okay. Didn't go. He was practicing yesterday, had on the white jersey, all that stuff. My guess is that we'll see Nehemiah Pritchett some on Saturday just to kind of get going, to get the butterflies and rust off before Texas A&M. I think we'll see him.
And then what's the word on Nick Martner?
Same thing. Was went and came and traveled, went through warm-ups, didn't go. Saw him yesterday, still looked a little gimpy to me. And so that's one I don't know. I kind of
starting to wonder if he's working through something that like –
It's been ankle, I think, but it wasn't high. You know, if it's one of those high ankle sprain things, then you never know. So
is it getting better or is it a management issue? Right,
yeah,
that's what you worry about.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, that one to me still looked a little gimpy going in. The good news yesterday was Larry Nixon was in a white jersey, hitting the sled, doing all those things.
Yeah, that's big.
Having him at that linebacker spot is really important.
Right now it's been Asante and
Nixon, yeah. A little bit of Cam Riley, but we saw Wesley Steiner.
He started Austin Keys in the first game, and he's out for a while.
I'll tell you what, though. Keys at practice yesterday, still super involved as much as he can be despite the thumb injury. Yeah. He looks and sounds like a guy who is playing again this year. It's just a matter of
– Oh, I think he'll play again.
My guess would be – a couple more weeks, then you see if you can wrap it up and play with a club kind of thing and go from there.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. That's the phone number as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
Back on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. 23 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Bill and Dan joined by Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. Jason, while we got a minute, go ahead and let everybody know. I mean, you guys have got an awful lot as you wrap everything up from the West Coast trip. Homecoming coming up this weekend.
A lot of things going on. I mean, baseball releasing the conference schedule today. We've got a lot of things going on.
There are a lot of things going on. I think it's fun time. So yeah, we got lots of football going on this weekend. But you're right. There's basketball. Things going on. Baseball releasing that SEC schedule. Somebody said, boy, it looks pretty tough. I'm like, well, that's just life. That's the way it is. They're all tough. But, yeah, you can check all that out, all the previews, things going on there at AuburnUndercover.com, and also follow me on Twitter at ITATJason.
This weekend I've heard some people saying it's a pretty boring weekend. There are a few interesting ball games, and there are a couple of SEC games that I think some people feel may not be competitive that might be a little more – might be a little closer than folks might think.
Yeah, Florida's not great.
Is that the game you were talking about, Bill? Because Florida's only I thought you were talking about Georgia South Carolina when you were talking about the game where people.
Well,
might
South Carolina may be able to keep it within 27.5. I don't think they're going
to
win.
I don't think they're going to push to make it close. I think Florida can make it close at home against Tennessee. Joe Milton played in an Orange Bowl. They played two layup games against a terrible Virginia team, mm-hmm. and then last week against Bowling Green. Florida is it.
Yeah.
I mean, it reminds me of next week for Auburn, Texas A&M. It reminds me of the same thing going, if you're going to do anything, you got to win.
Texas A&M,
Your fan base correct. Next week. Same thing.
Your fan base is out with a loss on Saturday.
Well, your season's probably over with. Yeah. I mean, Florida, when you look at the rest of their schedule, you're going – if you're gonna
do you make it to a bowl?
If you're gonna have one of these games, this is the one you got to have. Same thing for Texas A&M next week. So yes, mm-hmm. from a Texas A&M perspective, we know what Florida is about in terms of the swamp fan base. It can get crazy and it can be very difficult to win. I honestly thought that they weren't as bad offensively against Utah as people had imagined. They just had issues maybe running it at times. Actually threw it okay. I mean, I think he can do some things in the passing game. Joe Milton he hadn't turned it over, but hadn't really made anything happen either. He's got four touchdowns in two games.
He's got a strong arm.
He can throw it a ton. Florida's got some athletes on defense, and they can be aggressive and do some stuff. I don't know. I that one to me feels like it's okay. We're gonna go out there and. You know, might make something happen.
What about LSU Mississippi State?
I have no idea. I really don't.
See, there's another one. I think a lot of people are just assuming LSU is going to go in and just win by three touchdowns.
It's tough to play there. It's tough to play there. I look at Mississippi State struggling with Arizona, and it makes me think. They've switched. You kind of taking the ball out of Will.
Oh yeah, Will Rogers. What did he throw?
He's thrown 46 passes in two games. So, well, that's less than the average he threw the last few years
per game. They also took a big hit at receiver from what they had last year, right? That's a team that had one thing at receiver last
year.
And
well, because of that, they knew that hey, we're going to throw it 50 times a game anymore. And so, Jaquavius Marks is a really good running back. They've got some players. I just don't know that they got enough. LSU is still more talented.
Oh yes.
But I do think you can make this one ugly, and I think Mississippi State can make it ugly. And defensively, they can get after folks. And so I still think LSU wins that one probably by 10, 12, something like that. And then Georgia, South Carolina. Everything says, man, this is going to be a bloodletting, but I still don't trust Georgia's offense.
And the surprising thing I heard today is, in two games, everybody feels like, well, Spencer Rattler's just going to spend the whole game on his back. Georgia has one sack.
Yeah, one sack.
One sack through two games.
There's things about this team that are little red flag things, and they're not as – now, they'll do some blitzing, and they've probably been playing pretty straight up and doing some of that stuff. But, you look at them offensively, and they just – I mean – last week you get a pick six and an interception that hits a guy in the heel and bounces right to a guy, and they return a punt for a touchdown. They do those things now. They'll probably do some of that stuff because that's what happens to good teams.
Yep.
That they make those things happen. But South Carolina at the end of last year, now they've lost – you mentioned losing guys. They lost a bunch of key guys off that team that transferred portal, Jaheim Bell being one of them.
Their offensive line is struggling.
But Spencer Rattler, you throw it 50 times and go out there and make some plays – they beat Clemson at the end of the year. They beat Tennessee at the end of the year. I mean, this team is not scared to go in there and cut it loose. And Shane Beamer is definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I'd be a little surprised if Georgia beats them by four touchdowns.
They had trouble blocking North Carolina, though, right?
They did.
And that makes you worry, like a team that couldn't block North Carolina.
North Carolina's got more experience, actually, even though Georgia's got, you know, higher rated players.
Sure. And some of that might have been about North Carolina and not what South Carolina was doing. That's what would worry me about.
It may not be as easy to get the guys ready. Maybe that's what Kirby's trying to do, is fire his guys up by using different things when you're going for a three-peat.
And when you're a 28-point favorite at home, maybe you worry about complacency. Maybe you worry about the guys not taking the game seriously.
All right, 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone, and Dak is up. Hey, Dak.
Hey, guys. Good to hear from you today. How's everybody doing?
Doing good.
Good, good. Hey, Jason, question for you. Have you heard Coach Freeze talk about the blocking of the offense, specifically tight ends and receivers?
Yeah, well, he's talked about the receivers in kind of every part of the game. That's why we mentioned it yesterday in our notes, that we got out there for the first 10 minutes. Marcus Davis had a bag and his GA had a bag, and they were doing nothing but focusing on wide receiver blocking. And so I think that's part of the game for them too, has been to sustain some blocks on the perimeter, be more physical, do some of that stuff. So yeah, I think everything right now is under a microscope. Going, okay, what are we doing the best? What do we need to improve on? And I think wide receiver in a lot of areas, because there's so many new parts that it's almost been like, okay, we got a bag. We just shook it up. Now what's coming out of here when you're playing guys? And the other thing too for me, and that thing is, like, I wonder at Jackson State, at North Texas, how much of that is a focus?
Right.
And now you get to this league and you go, dude, you got to do every bit of those things to be successful.
Well, I went back and broke down from the side angle. And our tight ends and receivers did a terrible job of blocking and staying on their blocks the whole night. Especially, I was very disappointed in the tight ends. So I didn't know if he had commented on any of that or not.
Yeah, he hasn't talked about that specifically. He talked about the offensive line, actually, how they did a pretty good job.
That's just something he probably wouldn't bring up, but I'm sure he'd give you an answer if you asked him.
Yeah, he said that on Monday that they had a pretty harsh coaches meeting, so I'm sure there's things that have been addressed.
Talking about the Georgia matchup this weekend, do you know if the little receiver McConkey is going to be playing this weekend?
I don't know. I haven't seen
that will make a huge difference in their offense.
You're right. That's, he does.
You know, because when you have him on one side and you have that big tight end on the other, you got to pick your poison.
Kirby said earlier today that he could miss the game. He's still questioning.
Yeah, of course. He's probably going to be back our week when we play.
Probably.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good day.
Appreciate it, Dak. With that, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive. Come in. Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one. Our final segment with Jason Caldwell for the week. Auburn-Samford. This Saturday, it's homecoming. A Samford team, they're going to test your secondary.
My goodness, they are.
Hire's going to throw it.
They're going to throw it, but they scored 7 points last week against Western Carolina.
And gave up like 280 rushing and 260 passing.
34 first downs.
Oh.
Western Carolina had 34 first downs last week. Excuse me, like 284 rushing, 264 passing.
Uh-huh.
Was not a good game for Samford. Are they better than that? Yes. Should Auburn be able to dominate this game? Absolutely. This has to be a game where you build confidence offensively.
Oh, yes.
No matter what you do, you've got to go out there Saturday and execute offensively, have that kind of game, and I believe it has to start throwing the football. You can line up and run the football at Samford all day
long. Well, I think they know they can run the ball. They felt like they could have run it last
week.
They need to know that they can throw.
And you got to find somewhere to build some confidence in the passing game, no matter who it's against.
You better right now, because you're about to hit a gauntlet.
And here's the other thing. Texas A&M just looked horrible against the pass.
They really
Miami.
Did. Like, I mean, who would have thought like Miami just throw?
The secondary was terrible, and you're gonna have opportunities to throw it. Now A&M, Miami ran it some too, but you got to think that you're not just gonna line up and just go, hey, we're just gonna run it for 300 yards against Texas A&M.
A&M's got a little talent on the defense.
You
got
to make and again,
maybe young, but
and then Georgia, where you go, mm-hmm. you're gonna have to throw the football. I mean, like you've got to get better throwing the football right now if you're Auburn, and that's Saturday's the chance to do that. And I know. You have this coaches have this inner battle of what do we do versus what do we show and all this stuff. Well, sometimes you got to show it just to get good at it, because it's hard to get good at something if you don't ever do it in a game. And so I think they just got to go, hey, look, we got to turn this passing game loose. And I think Hugh Freeze mentioned, he said, we didn't call enough RPOs. That's what we thought was going to be the base of this offense, is where you're going, okay, we got RPO, and I think they're like, okay, these receivers maybe don't understand it enough to do as much of that yet. I think you got to put Peyton Thorne in control, drop back, throw it, do some of those things, and just see what happens.
See, that's I thought you were going to say Samford's an opportunity. If you're going to become more of an RPO team this year, if you want to call it more than you've called it the first 2 weeks of the season, Samford's an opportunity to perfect that. Like, Samford's an opportunity to get real game experience trying to get better at the RPO. Now, you could do that and throw it
correct,
more often.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'm saying you got it. That's where it is. Because here's the thing. If you're Samford, you're going to stack the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And you're going to leave one-on-one situations. That's the RPO. Yeah. That's it, is one-on-one. And there were guys – and here's the thing, too. You don't necessarily have to have a ton of separation in one-on-one opportunities. But you got to throw the ball in those one-on-one opportunities. And there were some of those situations Saturday where there were one-on-ones and they just weren't thrown. And like, okay, that's the whole point of this, is that you got to trust your guy to go win that battle.
It's amazing that we're this deep into the Jason show the week after Jarquez comes back, right? And this is the first time I think we've mentioned Jarquez Hunter like in the show. And there were ups and downs from what you saw Saturday night. I asked Coach Freeze about Jeremiah Cobb, who I've been blown away with as far as how he looks as a true freshman immediately. It's a crowded running back room, so getting any one guy more touches is an issue. But how do you think they're going to play this moving forward with Jarquez and Damari and Brian?
Good question.
And Jeremiah?
Good question. I'll say this. You've got two guys, especially in my opinion, in Brian Battig and Jeremiah Cobb, that absolutely you could move out of the backfield and throw the ball to as a receiver type guy. You talked about it earlier. If you don't get better at wide receiver, then you got to put more of those guys on the field in some
form. Yeah, because they need touches too.
In some form or fashion, yep. You got to start getting more of those guys on. Now, we saw two of them at times. We saw, you know, a couple of those guys playing two running backs at a time and do some of that stuff. If you don't get more production out of those guys down the line at wide receiver, then you find a way to put one of those guys in the slot at times, get them involved in the passing game a little bit. That may be an option, but those are guys that have to get touches. You saw Jeremiah Cobb the other night. I mean, Jeremiah Cobb, the guy that you put in there on the biggest series of the year to this point, and all he does is just take off and go. I mean, he's not scared, not afraid. Brian Batty's
and looks fast on a college football field.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
it's one thing, you know, you hear about, this guy's, you know, a speed threat or whatever. It's another thing to go on the field against a first-team defense and look like you're the fastest guy out there. And I think 2 weeks in a row now, there's been a play where Jeremiah Cobb goes out there with the ball and looks like the fastest guy on the field.
Yeah, no, so, I think it's an opportunity. But you're right, you mentioned, you know, those are things that come with the RPO. But I think if this is going to be an RPO system, then you have to go, okay, what's the defense showing you? And this offense is designed to take advantage of those things. You got to start doing it Saturday. And Stanford's going to go, hey, I dare you. I dare you to throw it. We're not going to let you.
Sure. You got to try to stop something.
You got to take some shots. And look, this team, you got to start creating big plays in the passing game. If you don't do that, it's really hard to drive the ball 12, 13 plays and score touchdowns.
Homecoming Saturday night, 6:00. Jason, what all's going on there?
Yep. Looking forward to it. Like I said, I got tons of previews up heading into this weekend. We'll have our picks for the weekend as well, and all that videos, real deal tomorrow. So check it all out there at Auburn Undercover. And like I said, I'm on Twitter @ITATJason.
Great seeing you, Jason. Thanks again. We will see you Saturday.
Sounds good.
That's going to do it for hour number one here of the Wednesday Drive. We've got Tiger Takes at the bottom of the hour. Phone lines open until then. Come on in and join us.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls here in the studio. And our thanks to Jason Caldwell for being with us for hour number one. Great insight, information from Jason. And hopefully you got to hear it all. If you missed any of it, encourage you to check out the podcast.
Yeah, Jason was outstanding as always. And you can catch podcasts of The Drive at ESPNAU.com in the podcast center. Or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe. It helps us if you consume the show that way. And all of our podcasts are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
It's hour number two of The Drive, and the second hour, as usual, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Love for you to join in. Our phone number, 334-321-1390.
I think we should, as part of a new tradition, to start the second hour on Wednesday, some housekeeping, you know, like for, you know, the email we get from Claire. I should mention some of the things.
Oh, yeah. I think that's
should
a good idea.
Should mention some of the things.
Lots coming up.
Yeah, because there's quite a bit coming up. Let me make sure I didn't. Yeah, okay. So we've got lots of cool things coming up on the horizon, including let me pull the email up first. All right, so
that's a good idea.
We got Tiger Talk tomorrow.
You don't have them all memorized yet.
I don't. No, I tried to do it cold, and I didn't quite get there. So Tiger Talk, the Sanford edition, that is tomorrow on Wings 94.3. We're gonna have the Auburn High School game on Friday night. Auburn at JAG, the former Jeff Davis, renamed in the offseason, now JAG High School.
Johnson, Abernathy, and Greats.
Yes, three different people.
You didn't know that.
I did not know that. I thought it was just an old-timey name of one person. I thought it was a pretty cool, like, old-school name. Next week, I believe they play Percy Julian. Is that right? The other
That's
school
right.
that was renamed in the area,
but this is the former Jeff Davis, and then followed by the former Lee.
Yes, and so Auburn taking on JAG this Friday night at 6:30. That's on Wings 94.3. Saturday, you can catch the Auburn University broadcast on Wings 94.3 against Samford, 2 p.m. I believe is when we've got the. That's the game day show?
Right. The game day on Wings is at 2. The Auburn Network coverage there pregame begins at 3.
Right. So just some cool stuff I wanted to point out to you coming up on the Wings 94.3 front with game day coming up very soon.
And we also would point out that at the bottom of the hour, this hour, it's our weekly Tiger Take segment as Jacob Goins sits down with Keontae Scott.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing what Keontae's got to say about everything that's been going on. And Tiger Takes brought to you by our friends at the Alsobrook Law Group. When you need legal assistance, call Zach. He's got your back. Alsolaw.com is how you can find them on the web. And they present Tiger Takes every week, Wednesday afternoons at 5:30.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you if you haven't had a chance to get through your thoughts on the Cal game, or what do you think Auburn needs to do this week. We talked with Jason a little bit about that. Some of the things Auburn obviously needs to get back to a much cleaner ball game the way they did in their opener against UMass, when Auburn had no turnovers and just four penalties this past week. Some very untimely. Of course, well, again, fumbles, I heard somebody saying this. What is a timely? When's a timely penalty or a timely turnover?
When the game's over. When the game's in hand.
Still, you don't want to do it then.
Yeah,
but
no,
I mean,
Auburn
had penalties and turnovers galore this past week.
But a lost fumble up 35 is a little different than a lost fumble up 4.
I know, but you don't
in the
go,
final.
Hey, good job fumbling late.
Well, if you're going to fumble, do it up 35 and
yeah,
not up
that's
4.
True. But if you're up 35 and fumbling, you may not ever get the ball again.
I don't know what – you know what? But
if you're somebody that had the ball up 35 and fumbles, the odds of you ever getting the ball again
aren't
very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not going to be until you're up 35 again. And even then,
maybe.
And even then the next
guy gets it.
The coach might think twice. No, but it was a and fumbles are – generally, fumbles are sort of a fluky occurrence game to game. You don't see – a season where a team is really plagued with. I mean, there are times when it's there are individual players who maybe develop
reputations.
Yeah, and
we haven't seen Jarquez Hunter or Damari Alston, you know, be guys that, oh, here they go, look out, it's, you know, slippery hands, so-and-so or anything.
I think they were solid hits by Cal. I mean, some of it's, you know, Jarquez maybe needs to be a little bit more careful when he's fighting for extra yardage and not losing it in, because the last fumble, right, is sort of Jarquez fighting forward, losing it in the pile. You know, don't do that. But no, I think I would need to see more evidence before I'm worried about the running backs fumbling, right? Like it was a problem on Saturday night. That doesn't mean it's going to be a problem moving forward. Now that could change. We could see, you could see fumbles, you know, on Saturday or moving forward, But no, I think it's I would give them the benefit of the doubt. They're gonna be able to work that out.
And you would expect with the game being played at home, there shouldn't be any problem. I don't think the crowd really had anything to do with the penalties out in Berkeley. But you know, I'm sure that they are working this week on cleaning those things up as well. Because like Jason was saying, I mean, you want to be confident in what you can do, know who you are, confident in what you can do. When you get ready to head on the road next week to Texas A&M.
If anything is limiting the protection issues, it's the fact that you have a new quarterback and four offensive linemen that weren't on last year's team.
I think the offensive line has played pretty well.
I think they have too, all things considered.
There have been some missed assignments, and a couple of them were pretty obvious. But I think overall it is without question, an improved group.
And I think the more those five work together, and I would still, I would still think that Peyton, you know, gives the team the best chance to win. And so with those five working with Peyton, I would think the more reps they get together on the field,
right,
the better the ultimate result will be, because you don't have, and there aren't that many teams, right, playing with experienced offensive linemen and an experienced quarterback anymore in college football, because those guys leave or don't wait to become, don't wait for depth. I think that's something that a lot of teams are working with, you know, trying to get chemistry between the quarterback and the offensive line. But I would hope that's something Auburn can continue to improve on. I agree. The offensive line, I don't think was a, you know, I thought there were times when, you know, the end result, right, the turnovers and things which aren't to be blamed on the offensive line make the final performance seem worse.
Yes, 230 really yards total offense makes it seem like, oh, the offensive line really struggled. I they had some penalties that they need to stop, but it's still, I think it's a work in progress, but I like the direction they're headed in. 334-321-1390, let's get to the phones, and Josh is up first. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Josh.
Hey guys, how y'all doing?
Doing fine.
Hey, just wanted, you know, that game Saturday, it was kind of frustrating to watch, but you know, my biggest thing, like this week, the only thing you can get out of this game this week against Samford is they just need to let Peyton throw it around, get that passing game in sync at least somewhat, because right now, you know, so far for the first two games, the passing game's not been in sync. And we got to get that. If we're not able to do that going into SEC play, especially with the teams we got to play, I mean, they're going to just load the box. And there's the throw. I just wanted to get y'all's thoughts on that. Appreciate it, guys.
No, I appreciate the call, Josh. We were talking about it a little while ago. I mean, Texas A&M was torched through the air this past week. And you're absolutely right. You're just not going to be able to line up and run in the Southeastern Conference.
No, avoiding predictability is going to be something this offense works with. You know, if you got something that's effective, you know, you'll lean on it. But no, I think you can't be one dimensional unless the talent is so overwhelming that you can sort of impose your will even against good teams. And I'm not sure Auburn is there right now.
334-321-1390. Appreciate the call, Josh. Don't be a stranger. We'll move on.
I could be, before we get to text, I could be convinced. If Auburn were to continue to struggle to throw the football, you know, I could be convinced that the best version of this team is Robbie Ashford at quarterback, and you're looking to throw as not.
But it can't just be on third down.
No.
I mean, regardless of who the quarterback is, Auburn's got to mix it up.
Auburn,
I guess the defense is going to give you, if they're giving you the run, you'll take the run.
What kind of pass attempts were you looking at per game in 13?
In 13, it was around 25 to.
I was thinking it was closer to 20 than 25. No.
I feel pretty confident.
But I just wonder. I mean, 25. if you want to work overwhelmingly on the run, maybe that's to a point where Robbie starts to seem like a more enticing option. But I would think as long as the downfield pass is a key part of what this team wants to do. It's Peyton Thorne and Peyton Thorne and the rest of the group building more chemistry and getting better.
Let's get back to the phones. Again, 334-321-1390, and Tex is next. Hey, Tex.
Well, you just stole all my thunder, Bill, because Dan talked enough to keep going that I didn't get to get in and say, if we throw in running down on running downs and run on throwing downs, typically you have more success.
Well, you want to,
yeah,
you want to keep them off balance. I mean, but with the an RPO is what are they playing? Are they playing you more to run or pass? And then sure, then you'd like to do, what they're trying to, or giving you the best opportunity to do.
But you have to run the RPO in order for you to run the RPO. Does that make sense? You can't function in that offense if you're not running it. And I didn't see anything that really looked to me as an RPO in the Cal game. It appeared that most things were called.
Yeah, you're right. Hugh Freeze said that we didn't run as many RPOs as he would have liked.
Yeah. So, and I agree with you, Dan. If we don't, for us to throw the football, there's only two guys in that room that I think can successfully throw the football, and I'm going to use your term, down the field, is Gurner and Thorne. Robbie is a tremendous athlete. Don't get me wrong.
Robbie's got a pretty good deep ball, but it's the intermediate, the ones that you'd be counting on, those 10 to 20-yard passes.
I just think unless Robbie shows you more than he's shown you to this point as a passer, you're going to face defenses that are playing the run. You know, it's going to be suffocating if defenses don't respect your ability to pass. And that's where it feels like Thorne's got to get better.
That is well said, Dan. And I would tell you, especially the part about Robbie. So when he comes in the game, they load the box and play press man outside. They're going to get pressure. They're going to take the RPO and the power away from you. And you're going to have to throw the football. I argue with a good friend of mine all the time. He goes, you got to run the football to be able to pass. That is way 1990s football. Mm-hmm. That's not today. Today is if you cannot throw the football, they're going to take the run away from you because you don't threaten.
Yeah, if you can't throw,
no
you're not
threat.
Going to run. That's exactly
there's
right.
A reason, there's a reason quarterbacks are making all this money. Right, Tex?
Yes. Yes. And so I think what we'll see is a change to where we are running true RPOs, where it's a read with a quarterback with his head up, and he makes a decision on whether or not to give the ball. And if he doesn't, he pulls it. I've watched two games. We've thrown one slant. RPO, the slant is one of the big plays in an RPO offense. So we'll see. I'll be convinced that it's a called RPO if those are the kind of plays you start to see. Until then, I'm just going to think it's like the previous 2 years. We never ran a zone read. We ran a zone give and a zone keep in the previous 2 years.
Yeah,
that's
you wonder
the way the offense was run.
I'm sorry. You wonder how much of it. Jason was talking about this. You wonder if it really was an attempt to just not show, to try to stretch this through three games of not really showing some of the things, or it's just they're not doing them.
Well, we may have thought we could just line up, but, and based on the running plays that we were running against them, mm-hmm. it appeared that we felt very strongly in our ability to line up and put our five or six against their five or six. The problem is we were putting five off and then they had seven. So, but we thought we could power the ball right at them and not use, I think we're better when our offensive line is moving and creating these holes, these gaps, are by pushing guys off the line of scrimmage, meaning, so they block down in one direction and carry the guys that way. And then the other side of the line gets kicked out by the tackle and the guard that's pulling. And I think that we run the ball better that way. You know, we ran it straight at them late, but I think, you know, once we got a few seams and we made a change in the offensive line that Dan had talked about on, I think it was on Monday, that where we put the young guy from tackle to
no, I so mean, so I had tackle. That, you know what, I had that wrong, Tex. So the change they made was not at tackle. Miller played tackle the whole game. They went to Gunnar Britton and Jeremiah Wright at guard because I guess Cam Stutz got hurt.
Yeah,
in the
Jason
third quarter,
Jason said he injured his ankle and should be back this week.
Yeah, it's,
so
yeah.
They really only played six linemen and the tackles never changed. It was Dylan Wade at left tackle and Isaiah Miller at right tackle the entire game.
Well, I'll tell you, something changed on the last two drives because we were moving the football on the Jarquez fumble drive also. So we found something we could do running
right.
the football.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing. I disagree, Dan. I don't think fumbles are fluky. Defenses spend hours and hours working on stripping the ball, punching the ball out, finding ways to knock it out. If one guy's got him, the two guys that are coming are punching at the ball. I think that's created a lot of times by defenses taking advantage. Now, can we wrap the ball up, like you mentioned, Jarquez in a group along the sideline? You know he's going down. Wrap the ball up with both hands? Absolutely. Could secure the ball better. But I think most fumbles today are caused by the defense getting a hand or a fist on the ball.
I totally agree with Tex about, you know what, defenses forcing fumbles can be a trend, and that can be something where some defenses are better than others at forcing them over the course of a season or multiple seasons. I think offenses tend to that tends to be something that rarely like that can vary greatly game to game. Right, an offense can fumble four times and then a week later they can have none, and we see that quite a bit in football. And that's you know that's what I meant by but no, I think defenses absolutely can be better than others at forcing fumbles, and it's not a fluke.
Mm-hmm. So. And I agree. I actually like that theory. It kind of almost looked like we were trying not to show anything.
Well, that's what Jason thought.
We had to, we had to show the ball, throw the ball to our big guy to the outside to get the touchdown. That we may have felt, you know, once their kicker started missing. That's the weirdest thing. How do you hit a
51-yarder? Yeah, that he had with plenty to spare.
Yeah, and then miss the rest of the time. That's
really.
That's why they're kickers. Well, as you mentioned, you talk about soccer players. That's they're kind of different anyway. So anyway, that's a little gig at soccer players. All right, guys. Hey, just one more thing. If when they start doing other updates about what's going on the stations, there's the lead on your page 104.5, 104.9 is an article that's 2 months old, and I don't know. I've done everything through my computer department, tech part department, can't figure out why I can't listen to the stream through the computer.
I'll keep seeing if I can't get a little help for you there, Tex.
All right, I'd appreciate that.
All right,
guys, y'all take care.
All right, thanks, Tex. Need to get to our first break. Mike, hang on, you're up. When we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star backyard.
211-390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's get back to the phones. Mike has been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Bill.
How's it going? Mike, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you fine.
I'm hearing an echo for some reason. I'm as good as you can be driving on Highway 280. Yeah. I'm as happy.
Maybe turn, let's see. Well, now if you turn your radio down, I mean, are you talking through the speaker? You listen through the speaker in your car?
No, I just hit pause. I'm an amateur at this, Bill.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I've known you for 30 years.
Turn the radio down. And turn one of them
down.
That's what you're hearing is there's a little bit of a delay when you do that. Yeah, so go ahead.
So I have a few Nick Saban thoughts, but before that, thinking about the Cal game, it seems like, two plays towards Cal, we lose. Two plays that, we maybe execute better, we win 28-10, and there's no alarms going off. Regardless, I love the direction of the program. And then I was thinking about some Auburn's better teams. I mean, you think about 2010, we had six games. We could have just easily lost as one. Beat Kentucky on the last play of the game. And then I remember 1997 when I was in school, we had a really good team with Damian Craig, won the West, and Mississippi State beat us 20-0 at home. But anyways, I had a few Nick Saban thoughts.
Sure.
He's widely regarded as the best college football coach of all time, perhaps the best college coach of all time with his record. I think coach is a misnomer. I think what he's way better than anybody in the history of football at doing is building a roster. Who are the last three or four quarterbacks they've had? I mean, you got Tua, you got Bryce Young, you have Mac Jones. He can find the best quarterbacks. How many first-round wide receivers have been drafted out of Alabama in the last decade? Eight, maybe?
Well, and you think about four on the roster at the same time.
Yeah. And then you think about, Will Anderson. You think about all those defensive linemen, offensive linemen, safeties, corner, all around. I mean, kicker at least average there. But, yeah, I think if you put Saban with equal talent, I think he's an average coach. I mean, probably better than average, probably a B. But he's not like you all the time. Remember Bill Oliver and these schemes that he would come up with and these offensive game plans from Gus. You don't have any of that from Alabama. Like, you never look at it and say, wow, they really had an awesome game plan there. Their players are just better than yours.
Well, I would add to that he always seems to have his players prepared. He builds a great roster and he has them prepared. In game, that is where I think that there are others that you would say, oh, if you want somebody as an in game coach making decisions, then you'd probably go.
And it doesn't ignore the fact, but I think we need to remember that a huge part of your job as a college football coach,
no question, is
acquiring talent. Like, if you're not good at acquiring talent, you're not good at being a college football coach because you're not going to have the players that your opponents have.
Acquiring talent and in handling that talent. Because there have been others that have brought in really talented rosters and they've just lost control completely. That's something
with
Nick Saban
portal,
has not.
Is it harder for him to instill that hard-nosed discipline now that players can leave without penalty?
I think absolutely
it is. They don't have to wait around? So I think I'm not saying he's done. I would be surprised if Alabama wins another national championship in his tenure, just because the game's changed. It's completely different now. He can't. I mean, for the last 15 years, Alabama for the most part rolls their helmet out there and they win. But I think another thing that I thought was interesting: when was the last time Alabama beat an Auburn team that had nine or more wins?
Never. Oh yeah. Well, before Nick Saban. I mean, if it's happened.
Well, no. No, not with Nick Saban.
No, Nick has never beaten an Auburn team. That's what I said. It would be before Nick.
I think it was 94. I think it was when 94 when we won the first nine games. Then Georgia, we tied Georgia,
right,
and then
right.
Alabama beat us at the end.
That's
or we
right.
came up short on a fourth down, I think.
That's probably
that's a
right.
long time. Mm-hmm. That's 30 years since Auburn's lost to an Alabama team. While they had a good team. I mean, Alabama beats up on Auburn, but when we have a good roster and got some momentum, they have a hard time beating Auburn way more than anybody else. Anyways, sorry for the long-windedness, but those
No, some great points, Mike. Be careful.
I will. Y'all have a good one.
You too. We'll get to Jerry Later. Quickly before we get to our bottom of the hour. Don't forget Tiger Takes coming up on the other side. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I just want to change subjects briefly. How's the expansion of Plainsman Park going?
I rode by last week. It's pretty impressive looking. They are the work behind home plate, ground level or field level work is what's going mainly right now. At least that's what I saw, and it looks like things are going pretty well. I would think, you know, we haven't had much rain, got some today, but that's helping things move along.
Yeah, I was just curious. I haven't been down that way in a while.
I'd say this weekend might be a good opportunity. You know, if you're over around the stadium, the football stadium or anything, you ought to take a look in.
Yeah, go check it out. All right, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Jerry. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Tiger Takes on the other side when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Part of the drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Time now for our weekly Tiger Take segment brought to you by the Alsobrook Law Group. When you need legal assistance, call Zach. He's got your back. Or find him on the web at alsolaw.com. And earlier today, our Jacob Goins visited with Auburn defensive back Keontae Scott.
Joining me here on ESPN 106.7, as he does every single week, it is Auburn defensive back Keontae Scott for Tiger Takes. I'm Jacob Goins with you here on the Auburn Open Like a Sports Leader. Keontae, man, what a game, what a weekend it was for you and for Auburn football. I got to start with just how you're feeling and how the team is feeling now that you came home back from California 2-0.
Definitely, you know, always grateful to, you know, be able to go on the road and come back with the win. I feel like defensively we clicked. It was the first week we finally got to a point where, you know, we got our assignments down. You know, still can always be better, but that's definitely the style of play we want to play with.
And for you personally, before we get into the game itself, you and I had talked about last week you having almost a homecoming for yourself going out to your home state of California. You talked about having family and friends that were going to be there. So what was the trip like for you, and who all did you get to have at the game?
Yeah, it was definitely great to be able to get back to California, you know, for the first time in a long time. I was able to, you know, my grandma was able to see me for the first time. Being at Auburn, a lot of my family, my aunt, uncles, able to come and make the game. So it was definitely some great things, able to see them. Met my cousin for the first time that was just newly born. So it was just, you know, great, great family viewing, and I was super happy to be able to see them.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I know you were excited about it last week talking about it. I'm glad that you got to make that trip with the team and go out and see a lot of your family. We had also, and a lot of people, had been talking about the tough road trip that it was coming from Auburn, Alabama, going out to Berkeley, California. But you had talked about how, you know, you wouldn't really have to adjust as much as other people would with the different time zone and the weather and all that. But how do you think the team did overall adjusting to all of those other factors?
Yeah, I think we did really good. You know, Coach Reese put us in a good situation. We're getting out there, you know, a day early of just to prepare and get our body used to it. Did a good job on the plane of our strength staff and our nutritionist did a good job of, you know, prepping us, making sure we're drinking a bottle of water in an hour. You know, like I mentioned, a posture on the plane, just little things like that with the trip. It definitely was, you know, it was a difficult one as far as getting back. You know, getting back in, you know, early morning on Sunday and then, you know, trying to just get ready to recover. So this week was just, you know, that was our main focus, just getting our guys healthy and recovering from that trip.
Auburn football goes out to California, defeats California 14-10 last Saturday. Talking with Auburn defensive back Keontae Scott. Let's talk about the game a little bit, because it was a tough battle, and this was a four-quarter game where the defense played lights out, nonstop, forced a couple of turnovers. You never really broke. You hardly bent at all, did the defense for Auburn football. On a night where the offense just couldn't get any rhythm until later in the game, how difficult is it for a defense to continue to go out there, maybe not in the best positions at times, and just hold firm and not give up any points?
Not really difficult at all for us. We feel like I mentioned before, just bringing up that standard of the defense and where we want to be at. I know Coach Freeze mentioned it, but it got to a point where we just, as a defense, just were like, okay, let's give them the ball back, keep giving them chances, because eventually our offense would click. You know, they ended up coming up big time and making a play, and that's just a solid defense we want to play. I mean, all game we were just like, no matter what situation we were put in, it was always just, you know, me being a leader, just bringing up, put the fire out, no matter the situation, where they get the ball. It just got to a point where our mindsets were, and our mindsets will be for the rest of the year, is if they don't score, they don't win. So that's just kind of the type of defense and the style we play with. And that was the first time we were able to, you know, get put in a situation to express that and show that.
Yeah, Cal scored 10 points in the first half. Keontae, no points in the second half. You guys had to prepare for two different quarterbacks, with one of the Cal quarterbacks sort of being banged up, and you didn't really know which one you were going to see and what effects they were going to have on the game. I talked to Eugene Asante yesterday about preparing for two quarterbacks, but how do you prepare for seeing multiple quarterbacks in a game like this?
Well, I think it definitely helps having a Robbie Efford and a Peyton Thorne on your team. Just being able to get those looks, you know, all spring and summer. So we're kind of prepared for a running quarterback and a throwing quarterback, per se, each week going in and out of weeks. So just being able to just know, doing good with our film study and preparing, just knowing that, the different styles of the quarterbacks that could come in the game kind of changes the way we got to look at how the offense may try to attack us.
And going into this game against Cal, everybody talked about their running game. They had an impressive performance in week one. They were talking a little bit going into week two with Auburn coming to town. And Auburn, your defense held Cal to 113 total yards and just one touchdown. What did it mean for you and this defensive staff to hold them to such low numbers coming into a game, like I mentioned, where there was a little bit of outside chatter, Keontae?
Yeah, we definitely, we heard the noise, but we definitely just wanted to – we accepted the challenge. We felt that the word spoken was just a challenge, and we accepted it, and we played with that style, and that you know, was kind of like a match to the fire. So we were just grateful to be able to just showcase that and just get that confidence going in, you know, being ready to go into SEC play and just knowing that that's what it's going to take each week, is to stop the run. So we knew they wanted to run the ball, and that was our main focus, on being able to stop the run and make them beat us passing.
Got to talk about the co-defensive player of the week in the SEC, Eugene Asante, who had 12 total tackles, 9 of them by himself, had a sack. He was flying all over the field, man. What did you think about his performance and just how much he stepped up in a game like this to help you guys get the win?
Yeah, man. I mean, the way he just flies around the ball is contagious. You know, he kind of makes you look at yourself and ask yourself if you're flying to the ball as fast as he is. And, I mean, a story just to tell everyone. I know I mentioned it yesterday in my interviews, but just bring it up again. I mean, I told Eugene on Monday or Tuesday that week that I had talked to the running back. He didn't even know that I didn't talk to the running back, but I told him that the running back, I called him on the phone, and he said he was rushing for 200. And Eugene thanked me. He said, Keontae, thank you so much. I really needed that.
Wow.
And then he goes out and has a performance like that. So that just goes to show you where his mindset is. And I wanted to put a little challenge out there to see, you know, I knew what it was going to take for our linebackers. So I mentioned it to everyone. I said, the running back, I talked to him. He said he was going for 200. And, you know, everyone just, you know, playing with that. You know, Gene told me the first thing he did when he got in the locker room was looked up at his phone and seen how many yards he had. So, and that just goes to show you where Gene's mindset is. And he's going to be a big factor for us this year, just being able to fly around and just correct things with his weight, with his effort and his play speed.
So what you're telling me is you're the reason that Eugene went off on Saturday, and you're going to claim his SEC Defensive Player of the Week because you're the one that sparked it all.
I definitely wouldn't say I would claim it. You know, at the end of the day, that was his mind his thought process, but I definitely wanted to, you know, edge it on and require of him to, you know, play with a little swagger and you know, on top of what it was already said, just wanted him to play with a little swagger with it. So I definitely wanted to mention that to him.
That's awesome. But do you see that energy from him and from these other guys and yourself included in practice every single day? And do you see that carrying on in games?
100%. We play with that in practice. We want to play with that all the time. Our motto is less work. You know, Gene is the main head guy on that. He's always saying it. He's always talking about it. So that's just our mindset of let's work. No matter what, let's work. So let's do it. So that's just what we do in practice. We talk about it. We fly around. That's just the standard. Like I keep mentioning, keep bringing it up. That's the standard.
Auburn defensive back Keontae Scott joining us here on ESPN 106.7 as he does every single week throughout football season. Something that Coach Freeze had talked about in some of his videos and interviews after the game was the fan support that you guys had out in Berkeley, California. What did it mean to have, it seemed like over 10,000 Auburn fans there for Tiger Walk and for the game itself. What did it mean to have their support all the way across the country in a game like that?
Man, it was just crazy to see, you know, all week we brought up that we may have to create some of our own energy in the stands. You know, we challenged our guys on the sideline and guys on the field just to create our energy with going away, like a game like that at 9:30. You know, you never know what to expect. But, you know, coming off the bus and just seeing that many people, I mean, you just look around and you see so many eyes just wide open. I mean, even my, like, man, it was just amazing to see, you know, the support. And it definitely helped us, you know, at the end of the day, being able to go in a stadium and the crowd noise, you know, defense in here, crowd noise, and that affect some of the game. And just they just carried us through that whole win, and it was just something to see. So very thankful to be able to go celebrate with them after the win and, you know, and be able to get that win for them. Some of those that traveled and made their way over there for that trip, just being able to, you know, get them a win and just being able to celebrate them was just awesome.
And Keontae, as we flip the script into week three, you've got Samford at home this weekend. It's homecoming. It should be a very exciting weekend across the plains. And for the first time this season, a true night game inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. What's that going to be like for you and this team?
Man, yeah, it's definitely another, you know, experience that I'm able to, you know, share with some of the new guys and just telling them that, man, Jordan-Hare at night is, you know, the top experience in college football, best experience in college football. Just very thankful to be able to get that experience and some of the guys get that experience too. It's going to be definitely some fun. Hopefully get some alumni back and just great vibes around the plane.
What can you tell us about the Samford squad coming in? Auburn's going to be a heavy favorite in this game, but you still have to prepare. It's another opponent in college football. So what can you tell us about the defensive game plan for the Samford Bulldogs team on Saturday?
100%, yeah. So Samford is an air raid team. You know, they want to throw the ball, so it's kind of a challenge for our defensive back group just to being sound and being able to stop their pass game. And also, you know, every team has the ability to run the ball. So just wanted to just stack on top of our performance last week and always get 1% better. So looking to do some great things on defense and you know, come out with the win. Like always, want to go in the game with, you know, that on our mind. But just want to just focus on just keep preparing, keep sharpening our tools as we get into SEC play next week. And just wanted to just keep creating our standard, keep standing on our standard and just getting better each week. And just looking forward to getting some guys in and get some experience in this game. And if it goes that way and as it should, get some guys some experience and get them, you know, making some checks as we go into SEC play where we're going to eventually, you know, need some of those guys. So it's a great week for everyone to just sharpen their tools.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up because, you know, in a game like this, as long as, like you mentioned, if everything goes like it should and everything goes well, you should be able to get some of those younger guys into the ball game. Who are some of those younger guys that have stood out for you on either side of the football, really, that have really caught your eye early on this season that we could expect to see on Saturday?
Definitely want to bring up Jeremiah Cobb. I mean, that's going to be a feature. Great Auburn man, Auburn football player. So definitely excited to see him to get let loose. And then also some of the guys that, you know, haven't been able to showcase some things yet, like Austin Osberry, T. Scott, J.C., guys like that. Mm-hmm. As far as Griffin Speaks, Marquise Gilbert, some guys on our defensive end, and then some of our younger linebackers and defensive linemen too. So just going to be exciting to, you know, see them go out there and cheer them on too.
Keontae, what's your status for Saturday and moving forward? I know Freeze had mentioned you maybe got kind of dinged up on Saturday. So what's your status if you're able to tell us anything?
Yeah, I'm definitely, got with it. I've been battling some body cramps, for a long time now. But I was able to, Doc did a good job of, getting me in and got some stuff done and figured out the problem. So, and now we're on top of it with, some of the medicines I'm taking. So definitely back healthy and looking to, get out there and fly around a little bit.
Auburn defensive back Keontae Scott joining us here on ESPN 106.7. You mentioned how you got to take every week and get better and fix the little things. How difficult is it to not look ahead to next week, which when you're starting SEC play on the road once again, how hard is it and what do you have to do to focus on this weekend against Samford for homecoming?
We definitely feel like we got some things to, get better at offensively, defensively, and special teams-wise. So we're not going to look ahead. We're definitely just going to look at this week on just getting better. And when that time comes to prepare for that team, as it will, we'll get ready to, go in and look at things like everything is going to, spicing up a little bit. Certain mistakes that we may make, teams will be better at taking advantage of those things. So just want to looking better at getting better this week, and we're not going to look ahead. We're just going to take care of this week and take one week at a time, as Coach Reeves would say.
Keontae, I got to be honest with you, man. Last week, I predicted, unfortunately, I was wrong, but I did predict that you'd have a house call on Saturday. I figured being in California, big game, I figured you'd be able to break one loose. Didn't quite happen, but, man, I'm still banking on it. It's going to happen this year, right?
100%.
Yeah, look, I know you're excited. You're such an electric player on punt returns and on the defensive side of the football. It's so much fun to watch you, and it's exciting for me to be able to talk to you every single week. Keontae Scott, Auburn defensive back, joining us here on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes every single week. Be sure you tune in here on ESPN 106.7. Auburn defensive back, Keontae Scott.
Tiger Takes is proudly presented each Wednesday at 5:30 by the Alsobrook Law Group on the web at alsolaw.com. Thanks to the Alsobrook Law Group for their support of Tiger Takes here on The Drive. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Back to wrap things up. Stick with us. Experience and knowledge from the